You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has closed its doors for another day, so as it's Tuesday, it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow doubleheader Dream Team edition. Tonight I'm talking to David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities and also Viv Govender from Rand Swiss, both from Johannesburg. Viv, I spoke to David yesterday, so I'm going to put you up first of all. What's happening on the markets at the moment, apart from volatility, uncertainty and all the things that we've been used to in what's almost the end of the most momentous year, 2022?
Well, I think the market right now wants to go higher, at least the international markets. And you can see that happening with the S&P, for instance, where despite we having negative news coming out in a day like we had last week, the market kind of like goes down a bit and then bounces back up again without any kind of news event. So if there's a negative news event, it'll come down, but it'll kind of go up if there's nothing negatively happening. And I think that's the kind of impression we're getting right now in the market. We also see a lot of shaking up happening in the FANG stocks, which have been the big drivers over, you know, the last decade plus in international markets. Basically the source of much of the international capital growth has come from these tech stocks. And though they've had a very, very bad year so far, but now we are seeing some strange things happening. I don't know whether that was Elon Musk with Twitter or not, but apparently tomorrow Facebook's going to announce thousands of layoffs. Google's basically announcing layoffs. Apple's having a hiring freeze going on. And so there's a lot of shaking up happening in like the biggest, most productive sector in global markets at the same time that we're seeing this general, I think, kind of positively going on in the markets and into the end of the year.
Okay, that's interesting because David is very close to the tech stocks and they've served him well over the years from what I can understand. And David, I was talking to a commentator earlier on today and I said, I understand a little bit about markets, but I also understand about human behavior and I understand what people use and what I use. And I was on the phone to this woman, very intelligent woman, and I said, we're conducting this podcast via my iPhone. So I like Apple. I use Apple every single day. And in fact, I got this report saying that I use my Apple phone for various reasons for around about 4 hours and 50 minutes every single day, or I did last week anyway. So I've got Apple. I'll use it every day. I'll continue to use it. I won't go to Huawei. I won't go to Samsung. I'll always use an Apple. I use Amazon regularly. I've got a book coming probably tomorrow morning, actually. So I use Amazon. I use Google every single day. Why on earth would you give up these things that you use every day because you understand them, you will always understand them, and you're slavishly devoted to them, David?
I very much so, and because they're incredibly powerful businesses that still generate a lot of cash. I think in this downturn, the last set of results, the media have taken an opportunity to have a go at them.
Yes.
And they've always had a go at them simply because of the power that they wield in markets, and also because, exactly like you, we feel tied to them and we can't break that away. So there's a bit of anger about it, and also I think the wealth that these chaps have created for themselves. So they've had a big go at them, economists, the Financial Times, over the last couple of days, and criticized them for what's possibly waste. In Meta's point, you know, it was the metaverse in Zuckerberg's case, you know, how much money has been spent there without any returns. And so we go up. I think at the top of the table are Apple and Microsoft, who have been quite responsible about their expenditure. Microsoft hasn't got any advertising. Apple, I still think, you know, has been hurt by slowdown in China or lockdowns and so on. And you can't ignore Amazon and where they're going. But I think the criticism has been about excess and waste and vanity projects, etc. But they'll get themselves right, you know. And I don't know whether you are going to find another Google or another Apple or another Amazon. So understand that eventually these companies have to slow down. Mm. They can't keep growing. Like China used to grow at 10%. Eventually the economy gets so big you can't grow like that. So, I you know, you don't have to fill your entire portfolio with these stocks, but don't ignore them. Don't ignore the cash that they generate, and don't ignore their power that they have on the market. So, I would still I would still add to them, not at the moment. At the moment, I'm just sitting tight. But I mean, somewhere down the line, they'll come back.
Do you agree with that, Viv? I mean, you can't. They're gargantuan. They're massive. They're behemoths. But would you agree that, yeah, maybe not now, but in the future, you have to have them in your portfolio, Viv?
The example I'd use here is that I love electricity. I use it every day. I'm definitely not going to switch over to steam or to fire. But Eskom's not a profitable business. It's the same thing you could say with tech. There are businesses that you use a lot of, but there has to be a business model that exploits and gets wealth out of them. Apple has been incredibly successful at that. And in fact, one of the reasons that we see Facebook under such pressure is because Apple basically came out and did a bit of a highway robbery kind of situation to them a little while back, where they basically took away Facebook's ability to really get a atomized version of view of who their clients were, or the users were, rather. And that took away a lot of pricing power from Facebook. But looking at these industries at the moment, what you have to understand is a couple of things. Firstly, David is right. They are very successful businesses, but they are slowing down. But the second thing is that if you look back at Microsoft still in use. I mean, I use the Office whenever I do any kind of work or anything.
Yes.
That business died effectively for a decade, 2 decades, when Steve Ballmer was in charge. Not just because Steve Ballmer was a bad CEO, but because the Justice Department came down and basically said to Microsoft, we're going to start watching you. You're a monopoly. And I think we can see the same thing happening. There's a woman in charge of antitrust in the U.S. at the moment called Lina Khan. And she's quite young. I mean, she's like early 30s, but she's a rock star, in the sector. She's written some papers about antitrust and so on. And the approach that she wants to take is not so much as the old approach used to be, as long as the consumer doesn't pay more money, you are fine to do whatever you want to do. And of course, Google and Facebook don't take money from the consumers. But she wants to take a more European approach, in which they look at other stakeholders, you could do competition in the sector. And I think if you look at Amazon, you look at basically Apple, you look at even at Google, those companies are really vulnerable to be, looked at that way. Apple gets a 30% cut from people that use the App Store for selling their products. Like Netflix, like a whole bunch of guys are paying Apple 30%. That is a monopoly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Google basically with its virtual monopoly over search. Again, same thing with Amazon. Amazon basically, look at what they did with diapers.com. I think it was the company with nappies. And what they do to suppliers that use them as a platform. All these companies are likely to face some kind of regulatory issues going forward. So even though the underlying business is great, you can't fight the government. They have the guts.
They do. And I'm going to ask you, David, something, because you're a prolific communicator. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at you now. You're communicating with myself and Viv Govender. Twitter, if they charge you $20 a month equivalent in South Africa, whatever it's going to be, will you pay that in order to send out tweets? And your tweets are great, and people love you, and you've got tens of thousands of followers. Will you pay that money, or will you just say, excuse me, you're the richest man in the world, and I'm going to have to pay you 20 a month to something that I've been used to for free? Mm. What will your attitude be towards that?
No, I'm not going to do it.
No, nor me.
No, I'm not going to do it. Simply because of who Musk is. I think he's, as I said to you yesterday, on my popularity, or I hope it's not taken the right way, the wrong way.
No.
My unpopularity list is first Mr. Trump, and second comes Mr. Elon Musk.
Yeah.
I just think he's an awful man. I just think he's arrogant. He's uncouth. He's gross. I'm not going to take anything away from what he's achieved with PayPal, with SpaceX, with Tesla. But as a person, somewhere along the line, you draw the line and say, thank you, I don't need this. We'll find something else to communicate. I just think he's an awful man. Yeah.
It's such a good word as well, uncouth. Uncouth, more for Trump. And it's the elections today. Don't forget the midterm elections. And we'll talk about that with you, David, later on. But you're quite right. He's uncouth. There's something wrong. He's obviously a genius, but there's a nut loose somewhere. Viv, your attitude towards Twitter, because it needs to be sort of an informal survey. Would you be paying money to have something that you've had for nothing for a while?
Look, not for me personally, because I'm obviously, I barely tweet. I don't know when I've last been on Twitter. I don't even have a Facebook. I do think I might have a Facebook account, but I've been such a long time away from it. I don't even know what the password or login is. So
good
I'm
for
not
you.
The clientele for this kind of stuff. I just don't, follow these things that closely. But that being said, if it's for the company, maybe. Because, I mean, $20 a month, if you're going to get promoted tweets for your company or for your business, it becomes that. But then, but the thing with Twitter is it's a lot of it is about basically, not so much about, promotion. And it's about, the viral stuff that happens. And I don't think that works as well with that model. He has talked about making it a more pumped up version of Twitter Blue. And so, for instance, you get access to publications. That's a possibility. If you could give me $20 a month and then I have automatically access to articles from New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, from Bloomberg, from those kind of things, that might be an interesting thing for me. But personally, for my own kind of tweeting satisfaction, I don't tweet that much. I follow Twitter. I read stuff other people do, but I really don't find the urge to have my thoughts into the Twitter sphere.
Okay, very well said. And I've seen so many programs recently about people. I mean, it's got to such an such a stage that people are saying that I've left social media and it's such a liberating experience. David, would you be liberated if you didn't have Facebook, if you didn't have Instagram, if you didn't have Twitter?
Facebook, yeah.
Hmm? No, nor do I. Never.
I very seldom use that. Hmm. But what the way I use Twitter, I don't use it to get angry or to express anger thoughts, anything like that. What I do use it is more for communication. I will.
Quite right.
I have a following, and I might say Marion Roberts today, did a deal, sold off Clough, something like that, and put a slight opinion around that, but without being controversial. And so from that point of view, I use it, but I don't get like some people and have slanging matches and so on. And I don't get involved in anything political, racial, gender, any of those. I just avoid it. So it's very easy for me just to withdraw.
To say no. Yeah, exactly.
To say yeah. I try to remain, I just keep out of the controversial side of Twitter. It can get very ugly.
It's so easy to abuse it. I think that's what you're saying. And there are people that are very, very stupid and very, very volatile and unhinged and use it to their own ends. For example, Mr. Trump, that was why he was banned from Twitter in the first place, because he was using it for hate speech. And it is hate speech, what he's going on about. David, let's move on to South Africa now. You mentioned Marion Roberts. When I woke up this morning and the JSE opened, it was up 32% or something. They've sold Clough to WeBuild. What is going on here? Yep. What is that?
This is a company that's come under quite a bit of pressure now because of cash flow issues and so on. And Clough has been with him for a long time, long before Mr. Lars took control of it, of Marion Roberts.
Mm.
And the problem now is that they have a very strong order book, but they haven't got the cash flow to fund a lot of these deals. And I think it paid them now to sell out of Clough. They're using the money that they're going to get to offset deals, just to show you how tight cash is for them. And we'll come out with a few million rand, but it does take away a lot of the stress of finding working capital to fund some of these deals. Just to put it in perspective, despite the 20% increase, it's hardly moved the needle after some big falls that they announced after losing some contracts earlier in the month. Their order book, certain contracts were, I think they cancelled. I can't remember exactly what it meant, but construction's tough. Construction's tough for South African companies, and I think all they're doing is getting their cash flow in order and trying to save them from going to the knacker's yard, which so many other companies have done.
That's a phrase I haven't heard for a while, the knacker's yard. It was like the rag and bone man in the old days, David. You're really showing your age. Either that or you read a lot of historical novels or something, but that's brilliant.
I was talking to you yesterday when I said, how do you explain to someone, you know, what turning on a tiki means, you know, or in the UK equivalent would have been turning sixpence. On a sixpence.
Exactly. So, yeah, a sixpence.
We used to say turning on a tiki. Yeah.
Viv has a very young a young child at the moment. He's probably sitting there thinking, listen to these old codgers. What do you think?
Lizzie, I said, you know, you missed by a mile. I said, you can't say I miss by a kilometre. It just doesn't sound the same.
Doesn't sound the same, does it?
I miss some of those expressions, yeah.
I do too, and I always try and revive old language. Viv, what's your attitude towards the construction industry of the JSC with a starting point being Murray and Roberts?
Look, I mean, as David said, yes, they jumped up today, but if you look at a chart of even a month, that movement today barely registers anywhere. Which was quite shocking to seeing how far these companies have fallen. Look, yeah. I do think the construction sector as a whole is not really something I want to be investing in. The reason being is that, look, they barely get much more margin than a company that puts cereal on the shelves. You know, they're so much more vulnerable to, you know, downticks in the economy. And I think right now we are quite likely to have a downtick in this economy. I mean, by all estimates, you know, maybe not in the U.S. because they have such a strong economy, but the rest of the world following what the U.S. is doing because they have to because of interest rates. Otherwise, their currencies will fall out of bed. Basically, pushing their rather fragile or more fragile economies towards almost a certain recession. And therefore, it's not going to be great for these construction companies. And finally, I mean, you know, look, I like them as an industry. I think government should actually be supporting them. In 1,000 years' time, if they're still in South Africa, we'll still be building stuff and we'll still be in the construction sector. But if we lose these legacy construction companies in South Africa, they'll be built by Chinese and French and German companies. They won't be built by a South African company anymore. And I think the government is, to a certain extent, you know, after especially the 2010 issues, taken too harsh a tone with them when they should realize this is not, you know, a beast to be tamed, but it's a flower to be kind of like nurtured. If you pardon the metaphors, because, you know, I think our construction sector right now is in such dire straits that government needs to really think about not about punishing them and making sure that they, don't go and collude, yeah, etc., but to make sure that they'd rather survive the next decade or so.
You know what's important, Viv? In 2005, I was at a bit of a loose end. I joined Sasfin. There's a whole history I'm not going to go into. And President Mbeki came out. This was that we'd been awarded the World Cup. And he allocated 150 billion rand towards construction.
Yeah.
And when I looked at it and translated it, I actually started a fund called the 2010 Fund, simply saying, look, construction's going to, you know, get a huge boost from this. Now, 150 billion, go back to the midterm budget and you'll see how little we're allocating at the moment. Nothing. Half of that, if anything. Or we might be allocating that over a number of years, but nowhere near what 150 billion in 2005 is worth today. Why I'm bringing it up and what I'm saying is that construction company, when they start to go like Murray and Roberts or all the others that we've seen, Avenge, Basil Reed, all of these that went, you lose the skills. You know, the problem is that if you start to lose projects, it's a industry that needs skills. These are highly skilled people. You know, if you want to build a road across a swamp, you can't do it with a third, you know, with an engineering student, you know, who's in his third year or something. And the problem is, the biggest fear is that as these companies go, you lose massive amount of skills elsewhere. These people go, and it's very hard to rebuild it. And that's what the tragedy of the loss, you know, that we're seeing in the construction sector.
It's interesting you say that. You mentioned Mbeki and allocating all this money and the huge build-up to 2010, David. But I'm starting to worry, and I'll bring Viv in this discussion in a moment, but I'll stay with you, David. Politicians and politics are starting to exert more of an influence on my thinking. Maybe it's because I'm getting older, as we all are. But I look at the UK and I look at Rishi Sunak and I look at Liz Truss and I look at Boris Johnson and I think, these people shouldn't be in charge. They're liars, or they're either liars or they are incompetents. I look at the UK and it's terrible. There's a chap called Gavin Williamson who has been appointed a cabinet minister and he's been exposed as sending vile tweets or messages, rather, WhatsApp messages to one of his colleagues saying, jump out of a window, go and hang yourself, all that sort of thing. Then I look at the United States of America and I look at the divisive nature of the Republicans versus the Democrats. And I think there are no leaders anymore. And we've had this discussion before, but there are no people that actually take charge and say, this is what we're going to do because I love my country. These people are saying, this is what I'm going to do because I love myself. David?
Yeah, exactly. There was a very good article this morning by Simon Barber in Business Day, well worth quoting, who exposes the Republican Party. He's based in Washington. He knows Washington. But he's forthright in his criticism about what's about to happen and about the Republicans and highlighting who they are.
Yeah.
As we spoke yesterday, but for Viv, I've always loved the United States. I've always admired them. But I have to admit I've got a very cold feeling about them now. When I see Trump appearing and this talk about, you know, he's going to announce that he'll be standing for president probably on the 15th, it just sends cold shivers down my spine. I just say, no, I've had enough. I thought we were over this. I thought we were over this hate politics, you know, which has just dragged us down to such a low common denominator. I'm not sure that I could tolerate, you know, going through this again, and I have no solution for it. But it's so sad that a country like America can actually forgive him for what he's done and stand by him again, or the Republican Party. It's just, you know, it's inconceivable. It's, you know, I mean, it's inconceivable that the United States is run by a person like this.
I sit down with my head in my hands sometimes, metaphorically, David. Viv, are you a political animal?
I'm too much of a political animal. I follow U.S. politics like some people follow American, English football. The one thing I'd have to point out with regards to the U.S. situation at the moment is that I think for about 30 years it's been possible to play to be politicians in the world in Europe and in America especially and not be serious people. The reason being is that there's been no serious kind of connotations or no serious consequences to missteps. I think Europe for even longer than the last 30 years, quite frankly, and therefore you've had a long period where you could basically just be a nice person or, you know, kooky, and you'd basically be able to get away with politics in Europe because they've almost stepped away from the global stage. Unfortunately, we're getting to a point in time again where you need to have serious people in charge of politics, because the kind of games that were played, you know, pre-1990 or around the 1940s and 1930s are starting to be played again with Russia and, more importantly, with China. And if you think, Lindsay, that you hate politicians right now, wait in about 10 years' time. Mm. Because one of the big things happening in the world right now that's a big, you know, shift is what's called friendshoring, onshoring, nearshoring of production. The reason being is that, you know, with all the stuff that we're moving to China and the vulnerability that exposes, it has to be reversed. And that's being driven primarily by governments. And so you're going to find governments literally becoming a much bigger part of the economy, because if you want to have a friendshoring, onshoring, nearshoring policy, you've got to basically, you know, incentivize companies to do certain things. That means money from government to companies, more regulations from government to production and whatnot. And that means basically, in not that many words, government becoming an ever larger part of the economy than it is right now. And that's going to result in, like, you know, I think corruption on a scale that you've not seen in a long time, even in the developed world. Mm. And second thing to think about is as well is that we're also approaching some massive demographic changes. I mean, the Chinese population is going to be down hundreds of millions from here by the end of the century. We may have already hit the peak Chinese population. I think we either at or near the peak European population, at or near, the Americans have a better chance because they have a younger population and whatnot. And why is it important? Because what you're going to have is a larger and larger retired population in the economy, requiring more and more government payments, government services directed towards them, meaning higher taxation on the productive part of the economy. Again, the amount of money you're spending on taxes, the amount of money that's going to come to government is just going to go up because it has a larger non-working population to take care of. And so, like I said, we have real big troubles in the world, and the people that are in charge right now, are not serious people. You know, even Biden or Trump, if you had to go through the entire U.S. and choose somebody to run the country, mm-hmm. given the kind of challenges faced here, there's no ways these guys would be in the top 50% of people. Forget about the top one or two people, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a really scary time to be looking at politics at the moment.
It really is. And your 10-month-old child is going to confront a world in 20 years' time when she's... You know, at university and doing a thing, it's going to be a scary world for her, because the one thing that I look at as well is climate. You talk about refugees. I mean, I talk about refugees rather, and I see Albanians coming over and taking advantage of the US system, and it's not their fault they're being recruited by criminal gangs and that sort of thing. That's my interpretation. But I think in the future it'll be climate refugees, because there'll be parts of the world that will be uninhabitable, and that will affect politics. And the right wing will then start to come to the fore and say, no, we don't want you, etc. I'm actually quite glad, David, that I'm
getting old.
Well, I'm old. Of course I'm old. Everyone's getting old. But don't you think? Don't you think? I mean, I'm trying to tell my children now, who are both leaving South Africa, incidentally, because they just can't. It's not they can't stand it. They love it. They're passionate South Africans, but they want to leave because it's better elsewhere, economically and socioeconomically and everything else. But David, it's a scary situation, isn't it?
I think it is very scary, and I keep thinking back and saying, who would we like to be in charge? You know, I think of Churchill during the war. I mean, he wasn't what he was meant to be. I mean, if you really read into his life,
no, he was a rogue.
A lot of it was PR. Mm. He was. Roosevelt, the same kind of thing. But they had massively popular. Even chaps like Reagan and most of the presidents that came on, there was a certain respect for who they were. Mm. I think we're entering a situation now where, I mean, if you look at the UK, where you look at America, it's very hard for you to have any respect. You know, if Trump walked into the room, you know, you're forced to stand. I couldn't stand. I'd vomit. I'd rather vomit. Then kind of...
Gosh, that's quite a strong statement, but I agree with it.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I just can't. I find him repugnant. I find what he says repugnant. And, you know, for a man like that to be in charge, I just don't, you know, I can't. It frustrates me. It makes me extremely angry.
Yes.
I don't mind if it was, the kind of standoff that we used to see between Bush and Obama or any of the other chaps. You know, Bush never upset me to the way that, you know, the way that Trump does. Nixon.
Oh, yes.
You know, maybe Nixon was that kind of a character, but I was a bit too young at that stage to get involved, you know. We hated him, but I didn't quite understand him. But still, I just can't think of ever, you know, being in a room where I would have to stand up for a Mr. Trump.
I think, David, the word...
And that goes to Kevin McCarthy as well. That goes to the leader of that, you know, who will be the leader of the House. He's repugnant. He's an awful, awful man. You know, you must hear him speak. He makes you speak. Angry.
The word hate, as you get older, you say to yourself, okay, you can't use these words anymore. I've tried to expunge the word hate from my vocabulary, but there's only one person in the world... I mean, I don't hate Xi. He's just a demagogue and a dictator. And so is Kim Jong-un. And there's a few others as well, obviously. And obviously Putin, who is probably more repugnant than Trump is. But when I think of the word hate, I have to say I reserve a special place in my hate portfolio, which has been reduced to one person. And that is Trump. Viv, you're listening very carefully on this one, and you're a political animal. And before we get to the markets, who do you hate? Who do you hate, Viv?
I don't hate anybody at the moment, actually. I mean, look, I mean, in terms of like the people that are really doing really evil things at the moment, I think Xi is in a different class than everybody else, because everybody else has a couple of million people in concentration camps, and the stuff that's here happening, okay, who knows what happens in China. But did you see the way he treated it, Hu Jintao?
Oh, goodness sake. At the Congress.
At the Congress, okay. So there's a different level of things that he does. The stuff that Putin is doing with regards to those children and the possibility, again, the sources I kind of semi-trust at the moment are saying things that happened in the Ukraine genocide and rape and that kind of stuff. That's obviously, you know, a different level as to what, you know, the worst thing that any American has done in recent times. So obviously those are different kinds of things happening. But looking at the US right now, the problem I have with them is that, you know, to a certain extent, this is the one large functional Western economy and Western country. Europe, if you look at what happened with Germany and their reliance on Russia, or look what's happening in Italy at the moment, or look what's happening. I mean, France might be the only place that's in Europe, that's reasonably, you know, self, you know, governing or knows what they're doing. But the U.S., quite frankly, considering the size of the players out there in the world, is the only thing that basically preserves the kind of global order. You know, it's the reason that ships can travel from, you know, China to Brazil and pick up stuff. It's because the U.S. patrols the seas. The reason that we have, you know, the current system of the world we have is the Pax Americana. And the idea that basically falls apart, and what happens then? I mean, the world becomes a very different place if China runs the world, or if you know, the European Union runs the world, and we don't, to a certain extent, understand how lucky we have been that the hegemonic global power in our lifetimes is the US, because by far and away, it's been the best hegemonic global power in history. It hasn't tried to conquer anybody, really, not like the English did, and not like the Spanish did, and not like the Romans did. It hasn't really tried to basically do the kind of stuff. It's not been perfect. I mean, the stuff is done in Africa and in the world has been obviously negatives. But if you look at what the stuff that every other power, with its power in the world, has done, we've been extremely lucky. And the fact that that might be going away makes me terrified.
It could be disintegrating before our very eyes, Viv. And there's just one thing I want to say before we get onto the markets, because we're all getting very passionate and political about what's going on in the world at the moment. There's a chap that lives in Norfolk, which is in East Anglia, the east part of England. He takes a 40-foot trailer on his truck every month and he drives it to the Ukraine. He fills it up and people come and give them tinned food and gas heaters and blankets and all that sort of thing. He goes there and he was interviewed this morning and he broke down in tears because he said, this is one of the things that's affected my life really badly. I went there and I spoke to a child whose face was completely dead. His eyes were just staring ahead of him, and with an interpreter, he said, what is wrong? He said, well, my headmaster was trying to stop the Russians coming into our school. We all hid in the assembly hall. We hid from the Russians, and he tried to stop them coming in. And he said, the Russians went in there and they tortured the headmaster in the assembly hall in front of the hiding children. And they tortured him for 20 minutes, then they turned him round and shot him in the head in front of these people. And I think to myself, what kind of human being does that? But anyway, that's Putin. He's pure evil. And actually, yeah, Putin and Trump, I think I hate them both. Right, let's look at the markets. It's terrible, David. It really is. It upsets me sometimes. Okay, the dollar rand is 17.71. Nice performance from the rand in the last few days. British pound against the rand is 20.43. The euro rand is 17.81. The euro dollar, look at this thing. The euro buys 1.0055 US dollars. The euro is in the ascendancy, or rather the dollar is on the fall. The gold price is up $30 an ounce, nearly 2% to 1707. The platinum price is up $59 an ounce, or 6.25%, and palladium has rallied by nearly 1% to $1913 an ounce. So there's a really big move, very sensitive commodities at the moment to either weakness or strength in the US dollar. Let's have a look at the commodity prices elsewhere, notably the energy complex. I've got Brent crude oil. It's actually down 0.3% to $97.63. The West Texas crude is $91.54, which is down a quarter as well. Natural gas prices yesterday up 10%, today down 10% to 6.27. And what else have we got here? A bit of a move in iron ore this morning, up to $89 per ton, but not much elsewhere. US 10-year Treasury bond yield, that's been a mover to 4.16. It was 4.23, 4.24 this morning, so that's quite a big move. And the South African 10-year bond yield is 10.53%. I quite like the South African bond market at the moment. Viv, South African bonds, very quickly before we go to the closing indices.
I didn't hear the last bit.
We're going to go to the closing indices in a moment, and that's your job. The South African bond market, with the rand being a relatively stable emerging market currency, would you be looking at the rand? The 10-year bond yield in South Africa at 10.53%, and saying to yourself, "Wait a second, this is an opportunity as long as the currency behaves itself."
Not really. If I was looking for a bond yield at the moment, it's US bonds or nothing, quite frankly. I do think that we're heading to a period where, you know, the US is raising rates as it is, and we basically have to just follow along. Because if we don't, the rand will weaken dramatically. We've seen like some really powerful countries in Africa. For instance, look at what's happened to the Ghanaian cedi over this last year or so. We've gone from three rands to the cedi, I think 2 years ago, down to 1.25 rands to the cedi. This morning. Look at what's happening with regards to the pound and the euro. Yes, you mentioned that they've rebounded a little bit, but the trend is in one direction. The reason being is that the US economy right now, by raising rates and having the world's reserve currency, is driving virtually every other currency in the world basically crazy because of what it's doing. With a reasonably strong, but you can get a 6%+, almost 7% inflation-linked bond yield from the U.S. government at the moment. There's no way I'd be taking just 10% for South Africa or even 12% from it, considering the risk factors involved and so on. So the only government bond I'd look at the moment right now is the U.S. government bond.
Gosh, that's quite a U.S.-centric answer to that question. David, I'm going to go to you now then with the closing JSE indices, please.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, I'm talking to you, Shapiro.
Yeah, the All Share Index closed down 0.62. In fact, there was weakness right across the board relative to the opening. The only sector that showed any promise or that was up was the property sector with
Hammerson.
But anyway, I'll give you with Hammerson, Redefine, Resilient. All of those did fairly well in today's trade. I mean, it's nothing great. It was up 0.5%. But if we go across the board, the All Share was down 0.6% at 69011. The Resource Index, steady. The top 10 down about 0.5%. Overall resources, 0.6%. So, yeah, a little bit of softness there. There wasn't anything major. Banks flat. But the rest of the financials were slightly down. And industrials down about 1% with process, Naspers leading the market down. Thungela came under a bit of pressure. You know, this has been one of the big stocks of the year. And there's concerns about whether the coal price holds or not. You know, whether prices will start giving away some of their gains as well. So it's been a bit of recent pressure on Thungela. It's been one of the negative features of today. Sorry, okay. I know you're going to go into those in a second.
No, I'm not going to go into those, actually, because you've exhausted me, both of you, with your political commentary, both of you. But I love that. I love that. David, what was the value traded today?
I just want to know what team. You know, Viv says he's a big football supporter, but I don't know what team he supports. I just want to know whether to continue the conversation.
Now, we have to talk about this. It's terribly, terribly important. Viv, are you a football supporter, first of all? And secondly,
yes,
if you are, who do you follow?
United, unfortunately. I've had a great childhood. Early adulthood, but my middle years have not been that good.
That's why you can always tell a person's age. You know, Viv must have been born in about 1980 or somewhere around there.
Yeah.
So when he was a 10-year-old in 1990, that's when he started to support Man United.
Do you know what I mean?
Those who were born in 1970 or 8, you know, they became the Liverpool supporters. Those who were born at the turn of the last century in the 1900s, that they became Arsenal supporters. No.
Do you know what's happened today, gentlemen? I've been watching it quite closely, is that Liverpool was bought by the Americans. I can't remember the name of the family. But anyway,
they were from
Harvey's
Fenway,
or
which was
Garvey's or something.
Yeah, but they called Fenway. They own the Red Sox.
That's it, the Boston Red Sox. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But anyway, they bought Liverpool for $300 million 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And they were valued in May of this year, Liverpool that is, at £3.8 billion. And they've said, they've more or less said, we're looking for investors. In other words, they want to sell the club. And they've sort of come up with the pathetic excuse that we've taken the club as far as we can, which is a load of rubbish. In other words, they just want to cash in. So there's that. And also, the other thing, Vivi, you'll love this. I was looking at the UEFA Champions League draw for the last 16, and it starts in February after the World Cup, etc. And I ignored it all because I can't go to Leipzig, and I told David this yesterday, I can't go to Leipzig to see Erling Haaland because it takes too long to get there. People don't fly to Leipzig directly these days. I'm going to see Manchester United, Barcelona, or rather the other way around, Barcelona against Manchester United in February. I'm booking my tickets now. So, Viv, are you proud of me?
Yeah, I am proud. It's good to have optimism, you know, even though you've been beaten down for the last few years. Also, I mean, the same guys that own the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I believe, own also Man United, the Glazers. I honestly think this is still an opportunity in the sector, because the only thing literally that brings people together at the moment that makes everybody watch the same thing is sports.
Yeah.
I mean, we watch different programs, different news, different everything. And that's why we're seeing, I mean, even in the US, the football team valuations have gone insane. Basketball team valuations have gone insane because they're the only common denominator in a culture that's splitting in two.
And the other thing is that probably you, in a pub quiz, you wouldn't know which teams in the United Kingdom are owned by Americans. You'd probably say, okay, Manchester United, that's one, Liverpool, number two. And number three would be Ipswich
Arsenal.
Town.
And Arsenal.
Arsenal,
they got
okay.
Krunker there.
Okay, number four.
Krunker, jeez.
Yeah.
Number four, excuse me, before you go on, my team since 1975, Ipswich Town, is owned by the Arizona State Pension Fund. Can you believe it? Ipswich Town, little third division team, owned by Americans. And if you went to anyone in Arizona and said, what does Ipswich mean to you? He says, I don't know what you're talking about. It's absolutely fantastic. Gentlemen, thank you very much for a really entertaining and very informative and very emotive last 35 minutes or so. Viv Govender is from Rand Swiss in Johannesburg, and David Shapiro is from Sasson Securities, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.